All right. How you doing, family? My name is Victor, and I'm an addict. This is who is an addict. Most of us do not have to think twice throughout this question. We know our whole life in thinking and considering drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways it means to get more. We use to live and live to use. Very simply, an addict's man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose lives, friends are always the same: jails, institutions, and death.
Thank you.
Okay. And Steve has asked that Laura read what is her name.
I'm Laura and I'm an addict.
Hey, Laura.
Before I read, I just want to say congratulations to Steve and to Bo. Where is Bo?
No.
I don't know. Anyway, congratulations. Steve, you mean a lot to me, and thank you for showing me what unconditional love is really about. I appreciate it, and I love you. What is the NA program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovered addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership: the honest desire to stop using. There are no musts in NA, but we suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no leaders, no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups, and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, color, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting, because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Congratulations, Bo.
Okay. Steve has asked Zawande to read Why Are We Here.
I'm Shawande and I'm an addict.
And when I'm reading Why Are We Here?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay.
A second.
All right. Okay. Chapter 3, Why Are We Here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problem. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Many of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But such cunning enemies of life are narcotics and sedation that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Jail did not help us at all. Medicine, religion, and psychiatry seemed to have no answers for us that we could use. All these methods have failed for us. In desperation, We sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people who suffered from a disease like alcoholism, diabetes, or tuberculosis. There is no known cure for these, for these all. However, can be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible. In NA, we follow a program borrowed from Alcoholics Anonymous. In the last 40 years, more than 1 million people have recovered in AA. Most of them just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are deeply grateful to AA Fellowship for pointing the way for us to a new way of life. And I want to say congratulations to the celebrants, to Steve. Steve is my sponsee brother. And I want to say I love you, man.
I love you.
And your wife and family. And I wish nothing but the best for you, man. You're a wonderful human being. And I thank God for you and for the hard work that you're doing for yourself to stay clean and in recovery and being a loving father and husband. And Bo is my sponsor, and I love you too, Bo.
You know,
thank you, man, for being a very, very, very extremely intricate part of my recovery. You've helped me in many ways, and I just want to say thank you, and keep coming back.
I might be mad I'm out of the parking lot too.
Bring you into the room.
Okay,
we have a card for you, Mr. Okay.
And while we up here, while I'm just want
to. We ought never be organized. Okay. Steve has asked David to read how it works.
Hi, I'm an addict named David.
Hey, David.
How it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are suggestions only, but they are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted one day, so remember, easy does it. There's one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Although there are no musts in NA, there are three things that seem indispensable. These are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to try. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the problem of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society, in everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from getting or continuing a habit is not to take that first fix, pill, or drink. If you're like us, you know that one is too many, and 1,000 never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again or create a new one. The substitution of alcohol has caused a great many addicts to form a new addiction pattern which in its progression brings as many problems as before. We seem to forget that alcohol is one of the oldest known drugs. It would appear that we are people with addictive personalities who are strongly susceptible to alcoholic addiction. I'd just like to thank Steve for letting me be part of this today. Steve's my sponsor, and he's helped to remind me that, you know, it's okay to be a human being. It's okay to make mistakes and to go forward from there. And it's okay to embrace recovery today and try to be part of the solution. I love you, Steve.
Love you.
Okay, and Steve has asked Benton to read the traditions.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Fenton. Thing turned on. Okay. These are the 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous.
The fuck are y'all laughing at?
Love you, man.
Yeah, all right. We keep what we have only with vigilance, and just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom for the group springs from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be well. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Six, an NA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Sorry about that. Eight, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, NA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, NA has no opinion on outside issues. NCNA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. Because we hear about suggested steps and no must, so often, some of us make a mistake and assume that this applies to groups the way it applies to the individual. The 12 steps of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate them all. We still have to face difficulties as they arise. Communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those of our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to their traditions, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces which could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work.
Okay, and tonight, like I said, is a speaker meeting, and Bo is going to come up and introduce the speaker.
My name is Bo, and I'm an addict. When I first got clean, you couldn't really find out much about Narcotics Anonymous. You had to read this little white booklet, which is most of our literature, and after a couple of years went by, we started like wanting to know what in the hell was going on, and all the roads led to the West Coast in those days. That was like in the mid-70s. And one of the first guys I met out there was our speaker tonight, and in the course of time, he has sorted out as one of the individuals I really look up to in Narcotics Anonymous. He's lived the NA life since he got clean. He'd sent his wife to check out the meetings, you know, make sure it wasn't a bunch of cops. And you really had to do that in those days. I let him tell his story. But WSO used to be in his house downstairs. He lived upstairs. A lot of the literature input was in a box in the trunk of his car for a while. And all the time I've known him, he's always loved people and taken time with anybody that comes up with him, to him, and treated everybody with an even-handed respect. And one reason that I may have stayed clean and all that is I studied a lot of Oriental religion and philosophy, and over there they talk about God alone is real, and you should live so that you recognize the God in each single person. And so this man, maybe without knowing it, is exemplifying principles that I was led to respect long before I ever got clean. And he's still doing that today. And it's a pleasure to be around him. And it's a pleasure to have him here. We don't get to see each other that often. I served on the Board of Trustees, and I used to see him every month. But, you know, now it's a little more infrequent. And I don't think I get to express how much I love him and appreciate him. I remember one other story I don't mind telling, and I don't think it'll mess him up. But after over 20 years serving on the Board of Trustees, the company...
My name may be Bob Riedel or something. I mean, I've been called a lot of things. But I'm still Bob, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Bob.
More importantly. But it's kind of funny in some ways. I've been called Bill for a lot of instances. I used to run around with a buddy of mine. My road dog used to name Bill. His name was in the book it also. And we looked like twins almost. Yeah. And they would see, some people would see him somewhere, and they would, or see me, and we just walk out the hall, you know, I just seen you go by. No, you didn't see me go by, just got here, you know. But that's okay, you know, in spite of that, I didn't have no difficulties about whether I was Bob, Bill, or Joe. It didn't make me no difference, you know, here's Bob here, you know. And I don't know, you say Bo and the welcoming I have had since I've been here has been tremendous, you know. I come from Cleveland, Ohio. How about this? I came to Cleveland, Tennessee to meet somebody from Cleveland, Georgia. Would that screw you up good? You have to explain that one, you know, I don't know. Whether Cleveland had some significance in my recovery or my problem with my addiction might have something to do with it. I don't know, you know. Cleveland used to be a brunt of many jokes. You know, the place on the lake. You know, the pit on the lake, or whatever they call it, you know. They gave it a whole bunch of names, talk bad about it. But that's where I live, and that's where I was born. You know, not that I had any choice about my birth or my ability to not live in Cleveland. But going back, you know, in time, you know, I was said I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, not Tennessee or Georgia. I just found discovered that they had those other Clevelands, you know. So I could probably pretend, you know, and play it off, you know, like I'm from down here, over there, or wherever, you know, because I was always pretending too. See, I spent a lifetime of making up stories about who I was and what my life was about and who I am and what I can do or can't do and the places I've been, the things I've done. I learned how to be a liar early. is one of the things I carried right into the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. I carried lies right into the doors of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
I've become a little more honest as a result of being here, but sometime I'll steal it and jump out of my mouth in a minute. Like, whoop, sit, pull that one back and cry, tear right up and over again, you know. From whence I came, as I said, I came from Cleveland and the product of a broken family. That seems to be one of the ingredients, and many of us come to Narcotics now. We come bring that bag of shit that we drag up here to the doors of Narcotics Anonymous that we've been carrying around for a lifetime. And I had my bag. You know, I carried that bag around and I loaded shit in it, you know. The reason I became, the reason I am, the reason. And most of it stemmed back to Mom. Mom made a bad choice. The old man left home, you know. And it was kind of a thing of missing, one of the missing ingredients, you know. Not that that's always the missing ingredient in our lives, but I think it's a great part of our missing ingredient in our lives. That missing ingredient of love that we don't understand or know what it's about, because we get a lot of misinterpretation of what love is about. Love wasn't spoken in my house. Let me put it that way. The word love was not spoken in my house. You know? Mom didn't tell me that she loved me. If she did, I was still a little kid, maybe, or she was still rocking them or something. But I didn't, those words didn't pass her mouth in terms of, I love you, son, or, and my brothers and sisters, I don't think they had no more. And if they did, it was in hiding. But she didn't speak love in her house, you know. Now, I could give you, I could rationalize and justify some of the reasonings behind it today, because I'm able to look at a better picture as to from whence I came and what the problems that she was having during these hard times. To give you just a thumbnail, you know, sketch, as I say, everybody has their own story. Mine's come in some ways only different in terms of the time element. I was born before the Depression, during Prohibition. So it'll give you a time fix of how old this sucker is. You know, during hard times when, you know, as you said, talk about people walking the street and no jobs and having hard times. And Mom trying to hold all this together and feed them and clothe them and house them and do all these here great things, you know. So I was on welfare. You know. In the neighborhood I lived in the ghetto, and damn near everybody in the neighborhood was on welfare. It was a standard thing on welfare day to go get them groceries. We only had a little wagon or something that we put together to go get some groceries at least once a week. And we always seemed not to never have enough of all things. Whatever it is, you know. My toys, we made them. We didn't buy them. We made our toys. You know, we made our scooters. We made our little pop guns and things. We made everything, you know, if we're going to join them and played our cowboys and Indians and all that other good shit and made our own uniforms, you know. But one of the things, we did learn, we learned something called survival skills, too. And I think the lying sometime went in with some of these survival skills. Why did I have to lie? You know, Mom's in the house and she tell me, say, if somebody come to the door and ask her, nobody's home. Start that one early. Your other home is on? Nope, I'm not home. Noise, they're looking to collect a bill of some kind, you know. Not that we had a lot of bills to collect, but any of that collected, and you say, well, see, you're going to get a hard time trying to collect. Yeah. One of my first habits was not using any liquid or those types of substance. I found I was, my first hook was being stealing. Shit, I used to love to steal. It was a provision of, I had some things that I didn't think that I thought I needed. You know, it made me feel good when I had your things. If I had your things, I felt good, you know. There was something exhilarating about getting away. You know, if you get chased away and get away, the little thrill inside, like, oh, yeah. Huh? then you share a little with your partners and everything, you know, and it makes you, you know, good guy. All right, Bobby's done doing, taking care of business, you know. So I thought it was a thing of status, you know, to have things. And things were your things. If I had no mean ways and means of getting them otherwise, I'd give you your things. You know, I liked your things. You know. And I couldn't take it home and said, you know, so I had to divide it up with my contemporaries. As far as in my house was concerned, I say love was not spoken. And Mom ruled the house with a stick. She whipped everything in shape. Don't upset Mom, because you got to ask her who's coming, you know. Sometimes not remember about the ones, what the ass you're getting this time is for yesterday. You know, I don't forgot what I did yesterday, but I got another ass coming, you know. So I was a defiant one in terms of, I would say, yes, I'm going to do this. Yes, ma'am, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take care of business, therefore, and going to do it different than him. Yeah. But I know that, don't upset it real quick. Just, yeah, I understand. And go do it, go screw it up. Yeah. Go screw it up. Because I just had a knack of wanting it to do it my way. I wanted it to do different. Yeah. I was always escaping in my head. I was always on a trip. I lived in fantasy land. And where I lived on fantasy land, I got it from books. I used to love to read. I like to read. What are you doing in Cleveland when it's snowing? Huh? And you say, it's only so many times you can sit out there and see if you can run in the snow. Then you come home and you get something and you go lock up in the shitter or in a bedroom or in a corner or something and read. And I became characters in books. I took me a lot of trips and things in my head. I could get in the book and become the character in the book. If he seemed to be having fun, Bob became that character, you know, and tried to live that part. Or promise myself, I'm going to want to experience that. I want to do that. And it seems the addicts, by and large, to say you have a way of even getting through school. You know, it's not a case that you're getting all the lessons together all right. You say you find ways to cut corners and do, you know, shortcuts and things, you know, or get next to the teacher. Huh? Bob was a good volunteer, too. Yeah. Oh, yes, ma'am, I can do that. You know, shit. Who want to usher the hall? Who want to run right? Who want to put the apron, you know, to clap the erasers and all this other good stuff? Bob is a good volunteer, you know, good kid, you know. And it wasn't that I was a dummy. I just seemed that I couldn't concentrate, or my ability to get the job done without trying to shortcut it. I was always shortcutting things. There are certain rules that you have in terms of English and math and so forth, in terms of to get the product right. Bob had always couldn't conceive it. He said, I had to do that. I could do it different. I could shortcut it. And if I get a couple of answers, you know, that way, the rest of it, the formula don't mean shit to me. You know, do it Bob's way. You know? So you see, I might have had a few problems, you know, getting through it. But it was always a case of them seeing my potential. See, I always had, Bob had great potential. They could always seem to, people saying, I've got great potential, you know. I was an arty little fellow. I could draw a line, you know, and keep, you know, straight and put nice colors on it, you know, and make it decorate things. And I was handy, you know, I was good with my hand. I'm still, you know, I've spent a lifetime of fixing things, you know. So I was always kind of handy with my hands, you know, so they see my potential, you know. So they would tell me, move along, you know, got potential. You know, it takes you to get clean and come to Narcotics Anonymous and find potential ain't shit. It's a static condition. If you're not putting it to use, it ain't shit, you know. You just got potential. What does that mean? But we play on. You know, it's whether we can run the 100-yard dash in 9 seconds or whatever the case is, they got potential. Might run it one time. You know, don't do it no more. might display it in case of emergency. You know, to show you that you got it. To the fellows that might be you want to impress or something, or the girl you want to impress, or whatever you're trying to impress, you know, you try to show your potential. So I get through school on much on my potential with anything. Yeah, fact is, my later years in school, I enjoyed going to school. You know, there was something I was seemingly getting something being served in me in terms of being fulfilled. I started feeling good about school. You know, I wanted to, I'd get up in the morning and want to go to school. You know, 10 below zero, I wanted to go to school. You know, I think about today's school thing and say, when as soon as it gets cold outside, the teacher's calling up, you don't have to bring Johnny to school, you know, or it's on the radio, TV, no school today, the temperature's too low. It didn't get too low in Cleveland, it said 10 below zero, it'd go to school. Everybody, school's open, baby, you know, make it, you know. But it was one of these things, you know, that I kind of in my later years in school, in high school and so forth, I got involved in mechanics and machinery and stuff like that, and I liked it, you know, it felt good. It seemed like I was accomplishing something. I'd fix things, you know, and put things together and all that kind of stuff. And I was talking to Bo last night and say one of the things I had a great propensity to doing was getting beyond me, you know, a step beyond what my capabilities are. You know, I'm in junior high school, but I want to be operating at senior high or college. So I was always jumping things. I was jumping over things. You know, maybe flash up this here great potential and get somebody to see it and they say, they'd be there watching you then, you know, to see if you can do that, you know. And Bob would put on a good display of practicality or accomplishing that little task. Not that I could carry it out to any great length of time, but I could get in. I could open the door. And let me get my foot in. You know, and I was one for displaying how well I could do this job, whatever the job is. I practiced real well. I'd concentrate and check it out and fix, you know, do things and get in. Even go back as far as being a Boy Scout. You know, everybody else was trying to make first class and second class Boy Scout. Bob went jumped over all them fuckers and went to Assistant Scoutmaster. I went to the training for Assistant Scoutmaster. I didn't go out there trying to tie knots and shit. Yeah, learn how to swim and all that good stuff he's supposed to be doing. My one chain went to the class. Shit, I had a chauffeur's license when I was 15 years old, you know. So, you know, it was just kind of one of these things that I seemed to could excel in areas, but not to any completion. I always wanted to be a jump ahead. It didn't serve me well because I've come to find out that all that I was missing in between sometimes has all the information that I need in order to complete the job or do a good job or continue the job, you know. I was always in my head going to run away from home. But it's not like today where you have places to run to. They got all these places to run to today, you know. Part of the thing, they got all this, you know, for unwed mothers and runaway fathers and all this place, you know, all this good place to run to. There wasn't a whole lot of places to run to. Mom had cut the rest of the family loose. We'd have grandma, aunties, uncles, and all these places that you can run to. You know, I used to call them hideaways, where kids used to go to the uncle's house and mama's house and grandma's house, and they get a little encouragement to continue whatever journey, or it wasn't as bad as whatever it was. And it was bad at my house. I wanted to leave all the time. But I wasn't going to run away without having a place to run to. And one of the things that was beckoning at this time was the military. Reading the military was such a place to go at this particular time, WW2 jumped off. and they start drafting your kids, you know. And all my partners, they were going off to the camp, you know. And I'd hear from them, and they'd tell me great tales when they come back for little leaves and so on and so forth. And my time was coming, getting right close, and I said, shit. They said, if you volunteer, you can make choices. Go where you want to go. So me and my partner, we said, we're going out and volunteer. Our number's coming up shortly anyhow. We were within a year's time, you know. So I went and volunteered for the military. A place to run to. Now, I had not experienced what manhood is about. Not in the full terms of what men were about. Now, I had I learned what women were about. And they taught me some lot of things. A lot of ladies introduced me to a lot of shit. I used that for a lot of years, you know, in terms of, I'm a man now, shit. They used to tell me, hey, baby, shit, come on over here. You know. See, they were drafting all these young men. I used to call them old ladies. They were only 23 or 24 years old, but they had fought out of there and they were old ladies. You know. But they taught me, come here, son. Yeah, you know. Well, come here. You're my man, you know. And they taught me, the rudiments of being a man. So I went off to the war camp. Now they have some other rude awakenings. You know, I didn't find out that I had to do all these things that people told you to do. Right off from the jump, I was insubordinate. You know, I don't want to do that. Well, I'm not going to do this. You know, they give me a good court martial real early. Yeah, let me know to get to my place and stay in my place, you know. But once again, I done the same thing I did in school. I learned how to polish brass and be a yep, 2-3 good soldier. Huh? Oh, man, we stood tall, you know. Creases good. Brass looking good. Huh? Yes, sir, no, sir, and all this other good stuff we need to do in order to get back. So I faked a lot of things there, too. I got in there, you know, and started polishing the brass and getting passes for things that I was doing that was what I wasn't supposed to do. You know, good soldier. Let him go, you know. Slap his hands. Take some time. Take some money away from it. Take a stripe, but don't get rid of it. Huh? But at the same time, what men did at the end of the day was, it was always equated with, let's go have a good time. At the end of the day, everybody say, what are we going to do today? Let's go have a good time. And a good time meant that we had to get something so we could have a good time. And each time I'm introduced to a substance, I had a bad experience. Now, people that have a bad experience usually don't want that experience no more. Said, well, no, I'm going to use that shit no more. They screwed me up, you know. My first attempt at drinking, you know, was they told me I drank too much or I didn't drink right or I drunk the wrong combination and I didn't need to get it right, you know. And I swear off of it for a week, you know, and go right back and try it again, you know. Tell me, well, maybe you ought to try some of this, you know, and they give me some of this or whatever they tried, you know, to have fun, you know, shit. Wake up on many occasions and ask about what happened last night. Oh, we had fun. But I want to know what happened, you know. Yeah, many occasions we come to, you know, wake up or whatever, they're talking about the fun we had, you know. We started out having fun. You know, the music was loud, and we was boogalooing, and we had two or three ladies around, and oh, we was partying, baby, shit. You know? Weed was the same thing, you know, hey, try some of this, you know. Yeah, we had a few hipsters during those days, because people that were using drugs during those early days of my use was people that were in the life, they call it. People in the life. You know, it was people that was kind of like in high places. They were usually in some kind of notoriety position, such as musicians, people in business settings. They were the hipsters. And you had to be hip. In order to get anything, you had to be hip. You had to know somebody that was hip to go out to get something. You just can't go up there and say, I got it good and none of this other shit. You know, you got to know somebody to know somebody. Well, since I knew somebody, that didn't help me any as far as using was concerned, because I had a bad experience again. I didn't cut it loose. I just had a bad experience. I said, I ain't going to use that no more. I'm going to use some of this. Got to the place where my hair don't come on the scene, you know, and it's the same thing. Try some of this. You know, I puked up for days. I didn't stop. You know, just told me I was a hog and shouldn't use as much, and you had to know what to do, and da-da-da-da, you know. As long as I could get up in the morning and report to duty and take care of that particular thing, I thought it was okay. I ain't heard nobody but me, you know. And I was showing up and being where I was supposed to be. I thought I was functioning quite well. Fact is, you know, I was in position, once again, you know, to be responsible. You know, position of responsibility. Huh? And I carried it all quite well. I faked well, pretty well, good for a while. Fact is, for a few years. I skate by and get by and, you know, and duck enough and do enough, you know, that adjusting that we have to do in order to get by. And I knew nothing about the disease of addiction. Nobody didn't talk about addiction. This is before TV, folks. I'm sorry. And in my house, we didn't have radio halftime anyhow. Yeah. And in the military, they didn't know nothing about addiction. And what were they going to tell you? They had no information. Had no information about addiction. They just told you what not to use. Don't use none of that. They had a list of shit told you not to use. And you know addicts like we do. You know, we want to know why they're telling them not to use this one. You know? That one. This one, you know. Let me try some of this and see what they're talking about, you know. So I was on this journey of my addiction of getting, it was getting more and more, this addiction was taking over my life. It was started dictating to me when to get up and when to lay down, how much I had to steal any given day, how can I not be sick? Which seemed to be the great thing. Don't get sick. Huh? And I was in the military, right? And they had a lot of shit to steal. Huh? So I had a lot of shit to sell. Huh? Stayed out of the country most of the time because I could function way over distant places. Huh? First thing I went overseas, the first thing I looked for was an opium house. Because I had read somewhere about opium dens. My great knowledge about drug addiction, about a dope thing, about an opium den. Had no other information. Nobody was giving up any information. Even my contemporary, the field I was using with, they knew nothing about the thing called addiction. Just don't get sick. They knew about that one, you know. And if you was ever in the military, they put you on orders and don't tell you when they're going to leave. You know, they snatch you up and say, you're on orders, you got to be present right now. You mean I can't go home and kiss the wife goodbye or whatever? Nope. Yeah. And they don't let you get no supplies. And I was to find out you could go, you know, anywhere you went, you could find drugs. I could find drugs anywhere I went, I could find drugs. Because we develop a keen sense of knowing what to look for. You know? We look for a certain person doing a certain thing, and we can probably stand on the corner in the middle of the block and tell when the dope fiend go by. Huh? And we don't know why we're so obvious. You know? Don't know. Just couldn't understand that. I parlayed my drug, this drug use and addiction, you know, 11. Drug addiction, and what you going to do now? You got to get somebody that's going to run for you when you're locked down. You got to get somebody to write you a letter when you're locked down. You got to have a place to go to when you get out. And that seemed to be a continuing theme for a period of time. So one of the things that I did when I changed and got out of the service was I had to find a new location. I thought I'd go to California, because I didn't know nobody in California. And I don't know why I thought it was going to be different, because I'm going to California with these great plans. I call them get-out plans. You know the ones that you write before? If you've ever been locked down, your plans for life when you get out. I'm going to get married, and get me a little house on the hill, and picket fence, and dog. And shit, I'm going to be a good guy. Yeah, shit. Every time I got out, I went to old places and old faces, to check for old things and information, and to check and get one for old time's sake, a little taste. And every time I would go back to the same place doing the same thing with the same bullshit, you know, over and over again. But I ran into this one lady that offered to give me an offer. And the offer was, it said, for me to continue to help you in this here thing about your recovery and you getting some help for yourself, is we got to get married. I kind of thought that one over a minute. That's about as long as I thought it over, a minute. You have to realize I was in the county jail at the time. See, she got me still, so she get me stand still for a little while, you know, where she could have this conversation. Yeah. And I said, I do. I will. Let's go do it. I like to run a lady crazy. Well, she didn't know where I was coming or going most of the time. Because I'd go to get a loaf of bread and be gone 6 months and call her from there. With sad stories. Always had a sad story. Hattie's got the saddest story in the world. And she went for it for a while, you know. But one of the things she did in the process was, people that are in pain or hurting and trying to get them help from themselves and don't have our type, our problem, they have a problem but they don't have our problem. They go get help. They ask people for help. Say, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know. She went to Al-Anon and they told her to put the sucker out. And you know we had played that game before. You gotta go. Baby, I love you, but you gotta go. What am I going to do now, baby? She said, I don't know what you're going to do, but you gotta leave here. And we played that game, that bouncing in and out game, you know, like I'm looking and I'm trying, you know, I'm trying, always going to try. I would tell the judge the things that I'm trying, judge. He just shake his head and say, oh, you're going to have to sue this time, shit. You know, we ain't playing that game again, this time. So what occurred here was, in one of these meetings, somebody told about a thing called Narcotics Anonymous. Now, how was the chances of her finding out this thing about Narcotics Anonymous? I had never heard nothing about no narcotic, nothing. Talking about helping no addicts. I was always looking for narcotics. I wasn't talking about no damn shit. Anonymous what, you know. But somebody told about this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. Addicts was helping each other stay clean, you know. And I have to realize, they say, during that period of time, addicts were not viewed very nicely. They thought all of them was insane, and they were assholes, and they were crazy, and they didn't have nothing to do with them. That was the attitude. So you can imagine when she told me she's come dancing in one day and tell me about this thing, this nothing called Narcotics Anonymous in this other place over here in North Hollywood or somewhere out there. And I told her to go check it out. Sure I did. Wasn't ready. I didn't say I wasn't ready, but I'm always ready as far as, you know, if I'm going to get in my way. It was just a case of I wasn't ready for this trip, you know, like a thing called Narcotics Anonymous in this foreign country as far as I'm concerned. You know. Reason I call it a foreign country, I didn't get far from my connection. Okay? My connection was greater Los Angeles. And these places that she was talking about were called Over the Hill. If everybody had been to Los Angeles, you know it's surrounded by mountains. I didn't know it had mountains around them. Until you have to leave it and you get, you know, you drive up, everything you get on there, you got to go up over here. So I ventured to get over that hill and to go check this thing out that she said that they were sitting around table, you know, the people reading out this book and trying to solve problems that we have for daily problems, you know. So I'd go give them a look-see and check it out, see what they're about. And that's what I found out, you know. I was going to these meetings and I went to this meeting and before I go to the meeting, I had to get me a shot dog. Y'all have your shot dog, huh? Oh, y'all had that. I know y'all got those little they're bootlegging places that the shot dog was a half pint. You know the short one. Yeah. I get me a half pint before I go to the meeting, and so I can get loose, you know. But I had no problem with the alcohol. And then when I got to the meeting, it was always a case of who got a problem. I've always had a problem. Shit. They treat me bad. I ain't got no money. Need a job. Can you help me? I've always put the bag on somebody, you know. Shit. I wasn't working. I couldn't stay on a job. You know, I'd go to a job. I could get a job, but I just couldn't stay on a job. By the time I get to stealing shit around on the job and getting sick on the job, I had to leave the job. It was very simple. And then I'm going to jail. You know, so it was always a case of getting out of jail, trying to get a job, trying to do this, and trying to do this process all over again. But one of the things that happened in Narcotics Anonymous that has happened here, you read the steps, you talk about recovery, you talk about some of your the things that have happened to you, and you start identifying with little things, you know, little lifestyles and so forth that you just don't understand how he understands what I'm feeling. I can't understand how could you have that event happen in your life because that's what happened to me. Huh? And so you find little identifiers, you know, and you find people that you can talk to or communicate with that talk your language, you know. They're not talking down to you or up to you or anything. They're talking your language. They talk just like you had standing out on the corner somewhere almost. But they're talking about different things. And one of them was the 12 steps. Talking about recovery. I didn't believe in them. And the first thing I would do, you know, I would dissect because it was your idea. So I'm going to show you, I'm going to change your idea. Because all of them don't, 12 steps don't apply. Not to me. Huh? It might apply to you or you, but it don't apply to me. Maybe a few of them might apply to me. And some didn't apply to me until after I'd been here for a while to get some understanding as to what the outer steps were. See, this is a very exacting formula that works in spite of you. You don't have to believe it works and it works. That's it. There's some old slick sucker got to tell us that steps work like cast off. Okay?
What you talking about? Shit. You just take them and give them a reason out of town, and you get a result. And they work good. You know, you got to believe in it. It still works. Had to take that to jail a couple of times and think about it. And I used to get, we used to call it a hip-hop pocket program. It was a little white book. Already, initially, it was not a real white book. It was a little brown, buff-colored book. It had 8 pages in it. 8 pages. It had all the necessary ingredients in it. It had the steps. It had traditions. It had 20 questions to see if you were an addict, even, you know. Just for today, the Serenity Prayer, the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and part of that poor understanding as to why the language would change from two and three into another language, so we could actually not get tied up in that. And damn, it's hard to say that, you know. That's the reason it was changed. Well, everybody would try to read it because I thought I was good at reading. You get to that one place, you got to stop. You know, maybe to stop help. I don't know, but it would make it not continuous, didn't flow. But I heard the steps. I carried the steps, books in my pocket. So when I had a spare moment, I'd pull out the book and check it out. Huh? Like you ain't got nothing else to do. You don't carry too much other literature in your pocket. Huh? And this here is not going to hurt you. It's not big as a handkerchief. I used to take it to jail with me. Huh? And tell the judge as I'm going to jail, Ryder, what you doing about your problem? I'm going to Narcotics Anonymous. He just shake his head. Heard that tale before. And he let me carry my book on him inside with me, my property. I always had the same problem of getting out of jail. I had no place to go. It was always a case of what I do now. And they told me not to go back to old places and old faces, you know. And that's usually where I went. I always had the business of going. When I'm going to jail, I had business to take care of. Getting out of jail, I always had business to take care of. It was the same business. I'll get loaded. But this disease called addiction will reach a point of terminality where you'll always ask, you'll plead for help. It's called you accept help or die. That's pretty kind of rough, isn't it? And there's no soft soaping it. It's called recover or die. It's your choice. And nobody's demanding this of us. I mean, but we think the world demanding something of it. Do you want to feel better? Do you want to work better? Do you want to act better? Do you want better things to happen for you? There's a whole change of personality change that takes place. And it's a slow transition. It just don't happen overnight. But some beautiful things and some wonderful things happened at the current. So when I became receptive and surrendered to the proposition that it could work, that perhaps each time I come back, I see somebody still sitting there. Are you ready, Bob? Huh? They used to ask me that old question when I was about to get out all the time. They come visit me and wouldn't put no money on the books. That's the first thing, yeah. Man, don't put no money on the books, you know. Shit. Talking about, do I want to go to a meeting when I get out? No, I don't want to go to a meeting. I'll meet you at the meeting. I got business to take care of. Huh? And when I got out, as I said last time, without having business to take care of, I had business to go to meetings and go taking care of that particular business or going to a meeting and see what I needed to do. But a whole lot of things have happened in between, you know. Establishing marital or that marital relationship that was not a marriage. It was a marriage of convenience, very simply, you know. I've been using whatever's convenient anywhere. Whatever's convenient, that was a great one for using what's convenient, you know. Misusing, I should say, because it usually was a misusing, not a, just using for a convenience. That was a great exchange. I was giving them something, and they were getting something at the same time. She was out to save a soul, and I was a soul she was supposed to save. You know, yeah. Always looking for somebody to take care of me. Yeah. Still am. It's still not working, though. Not the way I wanted to. What Alma did was, in the process of her growth, she started a thing called Narna. Because she needed a place to go. So she gathered up a whole bunch of the people around the program that had with having the same kind of problems she had with her addict. And they wanted to work on themselves, not work on us. Because that was one of the things that they used to run into other types of meetings, worrying about that addict or that person that they were concerned about that was driving them crazy. They weren't looking at themselves in relationship as to why did they choose those particular people. It was their choice. They could have left at any given time. They had all the resources usually. Because if you're like me, I had none. I had none. That's one of the reasons I'd volunteer for anything, you know. You going to take care of me? You going to... Oh, right. Shit. Rent paid? Place to come in the clean sheets and a meal. Everybody, all addicts look for that. I mean, most of us went, but you go back to mama. But I know I couldn't do that. Yeah. Mama's house was full. You know, all the mother, brothers, and sisters, and nieces, and nephews, and things, they didn't fill up. Mama was having a hard time trying to keep up with them. So I knew I had no space there, so I was always looking for a place in space. And I had to, you know, accept what goes with it, you know. So this here continuation of, you know, doing this thing over a period of time, you get busy in terms of willing to do some of the things that we learn in the rooms here, just doing, making a vain attempt to follow the steps and see how they apply to you and see what kind of results you get. Because that's part of how I looked at doing the steps was, I'll try and see what happens. Because I'm one of them people who don't believe in shit, you know. I'm still a hard head, you know. I'll test shit out, you know. And that's what it was. I'm going to give it a test. I'm going to try it like you say do it to see what happens. And in my trial of starting this journey of doing it like you say do it, or as suggested, I had great results that I liked. You know, not because somebody told me. I started looking good and feeling good and things started shaping up. God damn, give me some more of this one. Shit. I even started taking credit for it. Shit, I got me on the back. Oh, right, Bob. Step on, baby. Shit. Bob got to be of service, and I was giving up service, baby. Shit. I was taking care of business, you know. Carrying the message. I was carrying the message and the mess, but I was still carrying the message. Didn't know nothing about a God power because I had none. Had no God experience. I'm sorry. It took me 4 or 5 years around here to get some God experience as to how it works, and God in my life in some form. And it had to come usually through some adversity. A good kicking ass, I mean, it was a good kicking ass on a parole officer in the seat of my pants and carrying me to jail. I hadn't used anything, but I had gotten nasty as far as my belligerence and arrogance was concerned. Look at me, shit. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I got a job, shit. I go every night. I go to meetings. My parole officer told me, I don't want you doing none of that shit. Huh? Now, you know I'm not going to do what he said, dude. I don't know why he didn't know that already. But I wasn't going to do what he was going to do. So he had to do what he got to do. He put me in handcuffs and took me to jail. Hey, you need a rest. Yeah. Hey, you're getting too far out there. You know, you don't want to do what the parole department tells you. And I'm not going to keep on trying to tell you what I want you to do. I don't want you going to them damn meetings called Narcotics Anonymous. I don't want you hanging out with the rest of them addicts. So you do what you do, and I got to do what I got to do. And in the meantime, some things that transpired that I could not have written a script for. I had them convening special boards. I had somewhere along the way talked to enough of the right people that had clout that could steer the boat for me. I didn't have to steer it. In fact, I was laying up in jail. I didn't do a damn thing. But people came to my aid that I did not know, had never talked to before. And the next thing I know, I was back on the street and there was shit scratching the head, parole officer and all, I'm scratching the head. I don't know what the fuck happened, man. And I wanted to say it, I done it. But I know I didn't, and hadn't done a thing. You know? God working in my life said, well, we were praying for you. In many instances, I know many of you here in this room tonight, mother, sister, brother, grandma, somebody and prayed you up. And they said, I've been praying for you, baby. They prayed and got you here, but you better learn how to pray to stay here. And that's kind of one of the things. We have these events that happen in our lives that gives us some credence to it, is saying that there's a power that runs it all, and we are not it. We are not it. And sometimes we want to take credit, but only take the credit in terms of you staying around here and being a participant in a thing called growing. We have to learn how to grow up. The biggest thing I've learned is trying to mature in this thing called growing up. I'm not talking about mature in age either, because I'm an overpass, shot that one. You know, I'm just talking about growing up and stop being a kid or baby doing childish shit. I still do childish shit. You know? I go into my adolescent bag sometime, you know. It feels good, you know, to be a kid sometime. You know, just let it all hang out. You know, I can get out to be a kid. I just have to notice when to come in out the rain. Shit, that's my problem, you know. I want to stand out in the rain. I want to get good and wet, you know, before I come in out the rain. Don't use nothing in between, though. Or you to mess up the trip. I'm going to tell you that ahead of time. You mess up the trip. Yeah? There's a certain something that happens. We have to be available for these lessons of living. We have to be available, and by many examples in this room here, we become examples as to how it's done. Become examples how the steps work. We become a participant in our own growth. And that becomes very important. Nobody can do it for you. You have to learn how to do it. You have to ask questions. You see people in here with time, you have to go up to them and ask them, how do you do that? Or will they walk with you through whatever you got to walk through? We have to be available to our fellows that's coming along and ones coming in the door. That becomes very important in terms of what this thing called recovery is about. One of the things I found that addicts has been around here for a while, I know what it is. They get worn out. That's what it is. Sometimes they get worn out. Because you'll find somebody to go to the last mile with you, and you want to take him past the last mile. Huh? You want to drag him along behind you because it's your shit. You know? And you didn't promise to help. And you can't understand why he can't go that, that last inch with you, you know. You've been going up that with you all the time, you see, but sometimes he gets tired. Give him a little slack. Not too much slack, because addicts like myself, we want to take it all the slack, you know. I want to take all the slack out of it, you know. We get lazy. We forget. We got short memory. We have very little social graces. We don't know nothing about that shit. We don't know when to say thank you and goodbye and hello. We don't know how to do that. We just take it for granted. It just happened by itself. I don't know why you think you take it for granted if you haven't ever done it. If you don't make it a part of your daily living. It takes practice. It takes practice. And so I'm here on the journey of trying to practice these things that I have learned, the things that I have been taught, the things that have been shared with me. I try to apply and practice in my living today. I'm still working on growing up, folks. I got a lot of medical problems that I have to be concerned about, but not stopping me from living on a daily basis to the best of my ability. And many of us have been, you know, allowed to, you know, to grow older around here in order to suffer some of the things that we have to suffer. On the road I was on, I wouldn't have been around to suffer any of these things. I'd go back to that old soldier thing and say, tomorrow I might die, so today I'll live it to the fullest. Yeah. That crazy ass shit, you know. Live it to the fullest. You know what I mean? Remember all the fucked up things I can do. Because I'm living it to the fullest. And not finding out that's not what life is about. Try to live and enjoy each day. Because hopefully that's what you have. You have that coming. You have enjoyment and living coming. But you have to be prepared and to practice the things that they come by. The 12 steps of recovery, if you have never tried them, is nothing more than an exercise. At one time, at least one time, do it in its entirety, in its continuity, and find out what happens for you. Not because somebody told you. But what happens for you? And let that be one of the lessons that you have achieved here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Each of us here has a duty to pass on what we've learned and shared. Nobody's in charge but that power that runs it all anyhow. So you better get in line and get in cooperation with that power. If my God don't have no particular place to be, my God just is. And I accept it just is. I don't care if it's what yours is, it's okay. You see, I look at many philosophies and teachings to see where they coincide, where they overlap, where they work together, and there's sameness in it. Just by all the religions of the world looking for the same thing. They just go about getting there a different way. I don't have no particular religion. My religion is Narcotics Anonymous. And they give me enough things to do on a daily basis. And I try to do as many or as much as I can at any given time. But I still, the addict in me sometimes gets lazy and love to procrastinate, love to do all those things that are shortcomings and character defects. I still got them. They're just not as blatant and outstanding as they used to be. But they're noticeable, and I give anybody permission to call me on. Because I know I got them, and sometimes I don't see me as you see me. And sometimes I have a need for you to tell me and say, Bob, that ain't right. Just like if anybody that you had their pen and had me sign a book or something, better ask for your pen back or I'll stick it in my pocket. I don't steal the way I used to, but I still steal. I have a problem with it. It's just stuff that you just, I don't know, it's kind of like automatic. I don't know if it's laying there and nobody's around it. I still have problems in that area. That was one of the many things is that I had to do some real soul searching and some changes of manners or habits by doing that. You know, doing the thing and being noticeable, being called on. You know. So if you have some of the areas that say it's your area that you have to, not because somebody told you, because you want to feel better about you. And when I'm not having no guilty fits about it, it said I feel pretty good when I don't do little things. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to Bo I forgot his name that quick. I was going to give him a name, too. I was going to make him joke. But stay here until we get to know each other better and we get to share in this thing called recovery, because it's a hell of a journey. It's a hell of a journey. The experience you can't buy. You'd be surprised. The experience you get here, you can't buy. So I want to thank you. And I want to give Bo, he said, I carried it all the way here, but so before I carry it back, I'm going to give it to him. And tell him congratulations.
That's really cool. Thank you so much.